In case you haven't heard, we have a dog. To be more exact, we have a 5-month-old puppy. And it's the first family dog we have ever had, and it has been an interesting adventure so far. Jenna is mostly beagle, and like most beagles, she will follow a good smell for as long and as far as you will let her. And on Friday, there was another dog in our yard, and Matt took Jenna in the house, and this other dog was on a leash, but kind of we were chatting with these people, and the dog sniffed around and sniffed where Jenna had been, and then made his mark on her yard. She has been tracking this dog since, ever since then. And I would like to believe that this dog likes me. I don't know if dogs and cats really can like people, but if there is an interesting smell to follow, I come in second place every time. It doesn't matter what I say, what I do. If something good smells good, she's gonna follow that. Unless I smell like bacon-flavored treats. Sometimes I do. Before Jenna came home with us, we thought about changing her name because we thought, well, she's young and trainable, so why not give her a name that we like, one that means something to us? But when she arrived, I was very glad that she knew her name because most of the time, she comes when you call, especially if you smell like bacon. She'll come every time. But she knows her name, and she has come to expect that if she comes when we call, something good will happen to her. Getting the puppy to come was one last thing that we had to train her to do, and so Jenna she was, and Jenna she will remain because she answers to that name. She is our dog, and she is learning day by day that we are her people. But there are times when she simply ignores that fact. She hears me, and she knows I'm talking to her, and she willfully looks the other way because there's a smell to follow or a cat to chase, or she just wants to do what she wants to do. And so she ignores my voice. I can call louder, I can call lower, I can call higher, but if she wants to do her own thing, I am just a noise. I am just not worth her time. Now Jesus said, I know my own and my own know me. And he was walking around in Solomon's portico, which is a kind of covered area at the great temple. It was the festival of Hanukkah. And Jesus was in Jerusalem and people were noticing him and listening to his teaching. They saw him do miracles and there were debates with religious leaders and with scholars. And he had described himself as the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. But the people who were listening couldn't agree on how they felt about him. And a lot of folks were saying, oh, he's crazy. Don't listen to him. Clearly he is possessed by an evil spirit, so don't listen to this Jesus guy. He's nuts. And others were sure that his words weren't crazy or sinister or wrong. They said, after all, can a demon open the eyes of the blind? When he got to the end of his talk that we hear today, John reports that there were Jews who were there who started gathering up rocks because they wanted to stone him. And Jesus said, I have shown you so many good works from my Father. Which one of these things that I've done is the reason that you are going to stone me? Healing the blind? Helping the lame to walk? Preaching the good news? Calling on people to care for the widows and orphans? But the people wouldn't listen to him. And they said, it's not the work that you've done. It's what you've said. It's blasphemy. You've been trying to make yourself God. But you're only human. When the people demanded that Jesus tell them flat out who he really was he the Messiah, or was he just another wannabe, it really didn't matter what he said. People were just going to continue debating about the truth of his words. And so Jesus responds by telling them that he's already told them the truth, and that the works that he has done in his Father's name back up his story. He is who he says that he is, but they don't believe. They don't get it because they don't belong to his sheep. And that's the line in this story that really gets to me, that this idea that he tells them all these things and they go, nope, you're not the one, and he says, well, you're not my sheep. Are there some who are in the flock and some who aren't? Doesn't God love all the children of the world, red and yellow, black and white? Aren't we all precious in God's sight? Is being a part of the flock dependent on something I'm supposed to believe or something I'm supposed to do? In the chapter prior to today's gospel, Jesus says, I came into this world for judgment, so that those who do not see me may see, and those who do see may become blind. Now, how does that fit together with God so loved the world in chapter 3? Scholar Elizabeth Johnson says there is a tension between God's initiative and human responsibility that is not resolved in John's gospel. In other words, she's saying, tough, that's just the way it is, that's the way the story goes. She goes on to say, it is only with the eyes of faith that one can see the truth concerning Jesus. Those who belong to Jesus, who hear and recognize his voice and follow him, have been given to him by the Father. Everything depends on God's initiative. God sent his Son into the world not to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved through him. At the same time, the result of Jesus coming into the world is that those who do not believe are subject to just judgment. So what are we to make of this? Theologians and preachers and teachers have been trying to resolve this tension in the Gospel of John and really throughout all of the Bible since the very start. And it's tricky. In this kind of theological debate, there is always a but at the end of the argument, a but. Where countless times, if you look in the Old Testament, there are all kinds of stories where God says, I have had it with you people. I have talked to you again and again. I made you mine, and you treated me in a way that is just awful. So I'm leaving. This is the last you'll see of me. And then you get to the next book, and he's back. And God is back loving God's children and saying, here, this is what I want to do for you. And sometimes they tick him off and he says, that's it, I've had it with you people, I'm leaving. And then he comes back again. God says in the Old Testament sometimes that he's very angry and you will not see me again, but we always do. So it's not that I want to ignore what John says about judgment and what really what Jesus says. But for today, I'd like to focus on that part of the story that is more hopeful, that's a story for those who see themselves as being in the flock. The big takeaway from this text ought to be the promise of our Good Shepherd, Jesus of Nazareth, the long-awaited Messiah who said, I know my own and my own know me. They follow me. I give them eternal life and they will never perish and no one will snatch them away out of my hand. There are so many voices clamoring for our attention, and some of those voices claim to speak for God, but we need to listen carefully so that we can discern which voices are God and which voices aren't in the midst of all the others. And a lot of times, the most difficult voices to kind of translate are ones that come from people who claim to be Christian and who claim to be speaking for God. There are so many things that congregations and churches and denominations fight about within their own houses and without. And there are things that get labeled as the right thing to do. If you are a Christian, you will do it like this. Things like worship music. There were people in the first congregation I served who strongly believed that it really wasn't Lutheran worship unless the organ was being played. And so we had organ and piano every other week, and so they would only come on the organ weeks because clearly that was the way that God wanted it to be. We started having an irregular schedule, so you never knew when it was organ or when it was piano because it didn't matter. That wasn't the point. The instruments, the style of the music, the lyrics even sometimes, things that get in our way from hearing God's voice, and they really are not that important. Or we argue about Bible translations. In the early 90s, we started talking about inclusive language in the Bible, language that would not always refer to God as he, and that included both women and men when crowds of people were being talked to. And I had a couple of women at a workshop I was leading basically say that God's Bible was the King James Version of the Bible, and that if we'd used anything else, it wouldn't be right. Now, there are over 200 words in the King James Bible that since it was written have totally reversed in meaning. So that up meant down and over meant under. There are words that don't mean the same thing they meant when they were written so long ago. And so we need to find a translation that works for us. In this particular denomination, in the ELCA, we are very fond of the New Revised Standard Version. But it's written on a 10th grade reading level. So how do we help our children understand the Word of God and hear God's voice if we only ever use translations that are at that reading level? We need to be more creative, and we don't need to argue about which one is the best one if it helps us to hear God's voice. Is there a right way to pray? Do we have to fold our hands and bow our heads and close our eyes in order for God to hear us? Did Jesus say anything like that? I don't think he did. There are all kinds of ways to pray. Is there a right way to baptize? Churches have been arguing about that forever. Do you have to be totally immersed? Can a little sprinkling do the trick? Can we do it for babies, or should we wait until the person says, I really want to be baptized? And when is the best age to take communion? When my mother was a girl, you took it after you were confirmed. So that would put you in ninth grade, about 14 or 15. When I was a girl, you did it at the beginning of confirmation, so I was 12. And now we give kids communion when they're in fifth grade, and there are some churches that give babies communion. What's the right thing to do? None of those things are in the Bible. But there are voices that will tell you that this is the way that it needs to be done, and if you don't do it this way, you're wrong. You're not being a good Christian. And Lutherans can be just as guilty about this as anyone else. We have a lot of little rules and traditions that aren't in the Bible. Rules, well, not rules, but traditions about when you stand up and when you sit down and which way you look and how you hold your hands and what. There are incredible little lists of rules that you can learn at seminary which aren't in the Bible and which seminary students for years have worried about. When you hold your hands, is it your left thumb over your right or your right thumb over your left? We worried about these things. It's inconsequential. It doesn't help me hear the voice of Jesus better. So how do we know? And I think it's pretty simple how we know if it's the voice of God. It's not always easy, but it's simple and it's straightforward. God loved the world so much that God sent Jesus to be our good shepherd. And Jesus said that everything depends not on what we do, but on the fact that we belong to him. Our status before God never depends on how we feel or what we are doing or what we've done. It isn't about being sincere or free from doubt. It isn't about being good or doing the right things. It isn't about any of our accomplishments or any of our failures. The only thing that really matters is that we are known by the shepherd. My sheep hear my voice. I know them. They will never perish, and nothing can snatch them away. The voice of the good shepherd is a voice that liberates us rather than oppressing. It doesn't say, do this thing, and then maybe if you're really good enough, you can be one of my sheep. Jesus says, you belong to me already. And no one can take you away from me, because we belong to God, because he has promised to be with us always, and because we know that there is nothing that can separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus. We know those things. If we can hold on to them, we can feel safe in this belonging. We can know that security of being a sheep in this flock, and we can be free to live the abundant life that Jesus spoke about in that same conversation. He said, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. And Jesus wasn't necessarily talking about an abundance of years or wealth or status or accomplishments. He was talking about a life that is abundant in the love of God, a love that overflows into the lives of other people. And it is abundant and eternal because it comes from God, who is also eternal. And it's a gift, a free gift, not based on anything about us other than we belong to God. Now, I have to think that there are a lot of other voices in your life, voices that get your attention, voices that beg to be longed, listened to, voices that bring fear, voices that make demands on your time, voices that give advice even when you don't want it. And we can choose whether we listen to those voices, and if we do listen, we can decide how it is that we want to respond. But in the middle of all those other voices is the voice of the Good Shepherd who calls us by name and claims us as his own. And nothing can change that. You are loved by God whether you like it or not. That's just the way it is. You are loved by God. In our second reading for today, John describes what it might be like in the life to come to be with that God who loves us. And the promises are so dear. No more hunger, no more thirst, no more heat and hot desert, which for people who lived in a hot climate, that was good news indeed. No more, because the Lamb is at the center and sitting at the throne, and the one who is standing there in the center of it all is our Good Shepherd, who will guide us to the waters of life, and God will wipe away every tear from our eyes. That is God's promise to you. That's the good word from our shepherd, who knows you and loves you still, who forgives you on a regular basis and then sends you back out there to try it again. Now, you know, Jenna, this dog may never be able to tell my voice from a crowd of other voices. The dog may only give me her attention because I carry treats in my pockets that make me smell like bacon. But I am starting to understand her cries and her voice. I am beginning to understand when her bark means I'm hungry and when it means I need to go outside and I need to go outside right now. But it takes practice and patience and time. Listening for God's voice and separating it from all those other voices, calling for your attention, calling for you to respond, listening for God in the midst of that requires practice. But you will know that you are hearing the true voice of our Good Shepherd when it is a voice of forgiveness and love, when it's a voice that says, come and let me gather you in, when it's a voice that says, you are precious to me, just the way you are. And if the voice says anything other than that, if it says, I will love you, but only if you do this, and I will save you, but only if you act this way, and if you do these things, I could never love you. If that's the voice you hear, turn it off. It's not God. God's voice calls to you and says, I love you, you are mine, and no one can take you away from me. Not anyone. Not even ourselves. Nothing can separate us from the love of God.